Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Allison's Wonderland, the show that goes inside the world of animation and video games. I'm your host, Allison Packard. I'm assuming if you're here, it's because you either already follow me or maybe you are a fan or friend of Nava Voices or Tim Freelander. Today, we're interviewing Tim Freelander, who is the president and co-founder of Nava Voices, aka the National Association of Voice Actors. And specifically, we are going to be talking about AI voices and the impact that they are having on the voice acting community. So those of us that make our bread and butter as voice actors have been hearing for a while about AI voices and the viability of these voices. And so we're going to deep dive on what growing trends are happening in AI, what type of contracts voice actors are being asked to sign, and any other topics that might come up. This is a great opportunity. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Tim, how are you today?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. Happy Friday. So glad it's
Friday. Happy Friday. I know. It is finally made it.
So Tim, you have been very busy talking about everything that is the multi-layered complexity of synthetic voices in the press and at VO Atlanta and all different kinds of conventions. So I'm really excited that I had the chance to sit down and chat with you about this topic because it's something that's been on my mind personally for a few years. But now it's here. So I think it's something.
It is here.
Yeah. So can you tell us just a little bit about how you define an AI voice or synthetic voice?
Sure. Yeah. It's different from you taking a pre-existing audio and editing up somebody's pre-existing performance. You know, if you were to mod a performance, we've seen in video games, somebody could take a mod and change that. The digital double or synthetic double is literally taking somebody's voice, recording it into a machine learning audio engine and recreating or creating a completely new synthetic voice that sounds like the person, but is a machine learned voice that could then say anything, sound like anything, can have different pronunciations, can have different accents, can change and basically say something, give a performance that you yourself had never given.
And there was recently a celebrity leak. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how people were using AI voices and put stuff on the internet with all different kinds of celebrities and prominent voice actors?
Yeah, there's been a lot of this. There are certain audio engines out there that exist already, certain websites, uberduck.ai, fakeyou.ai, that fans have taken, and I think this is what you're referring to, performances from video games, performances from animation, and put these into these engines, synthesized them, and created synthetic voices in using the actual character of, could be anybody from video game, could be anybody from a television series. That's one of them. The more kind of egregious example is some of the voice talent that were doxxed recently in the last couple of months on Twitter, using different technology, different apps, one of the apps to actually take their voice and say, my name is so-and-so, here is my address, and then to say racist and homophobic rants after that. And those were posted on Twitter for multiple days before they were taken down. And those were done in, this is somebody's actual voice. This is a voice that sounds like me or this person, and it is their actual voice. It's indiscernible from them having said it themselves.
Is that the 11 Labs software or is that?
That was similar to that. 11 Labs was tagged as, for whatever reason, 11 Labs was tagged in those posts, but we're not sure that it was actually 11 Labs technology that was used to create those. Mm-hmm. But 11 Labs would be the similar technology. That's something that anybody can take right now. It's $5 a month. You can go on 11 Labs, create a voice, record anything you want to. I've messed around with it. I've used it. It sounds really good. And we're in the infancy of this technology. So it doesn't sound great. It's not a replacement yet.
Yeah. And do you have any timeline for when you think it? I mean, in some ways, for certain explainer videos or non-broadcast pitches, it could actually be fine.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and this is back up to kind of Nava's stance on this, is that we're not anti-AI, we're not anti-technology. I think voice actors in general, we work with technology every day, right? The advent of of digital audio workstations for us to create in, the ability to edit and move as quickly as we do has benefited from technology.
Yeah.
So it's not the anti-AI or anti-technology by any means. It is making sure that we have control and say over what happens with our voice, which is our bread and butter, right? This is how we make our living. So, and, you know, I look at this from kind of a musician standpoint as well, which is from a musician standpoint,
okay,
that you could license, you know, there is a place in this world for us to license our voices for things that we can't do ourselves, humanly can't do. There's an option. Possibility. Yeah.
So you could be on a beach in Mexico and licensing your voice to do all your auditions for you while you're gone.
Absolutely. And there is potential, you know, there is potential in there, not as a replacement, but as an addition to what we do as voice actors. You know, the technology's out of the bag, right? It's out there. It exists. We can't stop it. We're not going to put it away. It's not going to go away. You know, we're going to hopefully find some, there needs to be some legislation, some legal framework for this technology to exist that doesn't harm or take away from those people.
Nava has really made this a big position of their organization, of your organization. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what your stance is around contracts?
Sure. You know, our stance, and this is, so Nava has integrated the Vocal Variants Group, which is a group of voice actors, Gary Lowenthal, Sissy Jones, Keith Farley, myself, Stephanie Shea, Andy Danish. We've brought this group, Sissy Jones, actually, who started the group about 18 months ago, can't forget Sissy, who has put out basically an educational standpoint, which is read your contracts, know what to look for in your contracts, and ask for things to be changed if you see something in your contract that is either going to allow for digital doubles or simulation of your voice, or if it's not in there, add some addendum, which we created. We have commissioned an AI synthetic writer that you can add to your contracts that will explicitly reference synthetic voices, machine learning, and digital doubles.
So, Tim, I thought you actually commissioned an AI writer.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll say addendum. An AI. Yeah. Okay. We commissioned a contract to be added. Yeah.
Right.
And that's our biggest thing right now is education, reading your contracts, because, you know, one of the things that we forget as voice actors is that we are one half of this contract. We are the other side of this contract, right? And we need to have enough education to safeguard ourselves and our future in this industry going forward.
And then all that information is available on your website?
Yep, absolutely. There's a resources tab, and under that it says synthetic AI, and you can go to that page. It has sample contracts. It has definitions, some terms to look for. There's a glossary of terms. And there's some information on there that will give you a chance to look for certain things. You can, you know, these contracts are long, right? How many people have, you know, receive 15, 20, 30 pages of a contract? Sometimes it's handed to us when you walk into a session, right? We don't always get a chance to see this ahead of time. If you get it in a DocuSign or you get it in a digital format, you know, Control F, Command F, and search for certain words. Search for digital, search for simulation, search for transformative, search for synthetic, anything along those lines you might think, and see if those are in the contracts. That's what we really want people to be aware of, is what is in the contracts. Also, what potentially is in contracts that we have signed over the last however many years that we didn't know about this terminology that could be in these contracts.
Interesting. And for anyone that doesn't, is taking notes, that is novelvoices.org.
Correct.
And have you heard any personal stories about people going back and realizing that they had signed something that allowed for their voice to be manipulated? Can you share some of those stories?
There was kind of one of the big ones that kind of came to our attention was a few months ago with some dubbing contracts from Netflix that a studio had added in language into this writer that allowed for digital simulation, and got some pushback from voice actors and got it removed from the contract. Also made its way up to SAG-AFTRA, and SAG-AFTRA has now put out a statement a few weeks ago saying that synthetic voices, AI voices, are a part of collective bargaining agreements, and they have not been agreed to in any contract. So any union contract you get that has this language in there, it's not valid language in these contracts.
Interesting. Okay. So that's good that we've reached that point. Now, with the SAG audiobooks and Apple audiobook issue, can you summarize that for us in a nutshell?
Sure. There is Findaway Voices. It came out about a month ago that in their rights holder contract, meaning the author of the book, had been giving authorization for Findaway Voices to send this the recorded audio to Apple audiobooks to train their audiobook machine learning. That language was not in the author, in the narrator's contract. Sorry, I'm getting my terminology mixed up here. Not in the narrator's contract. So the actual voice actor wasn't giving the authority. The author of the book was giving the authority to transfer that audio to Apple. And so that's a pretty big deal, right? That was something, you know, narrators didn't know if somebody's narrating for Findaway for however many long, the last few years, last 5 years, the last 10 years, how long has this been happening, right?
Yeah. And when you, with AI learning, it's like the more access it has to recordings of your voice, the better it can duplicate your voice. So for anybody in that position, audiobooks are definitely a long haul. And now Apple is their audiobooks. They're releasing this AI. They're using the technology now. Are voice actors finding they're getting less work as a result?
You know, I don't know. You know, this is one of the things that we right now is that it's very hard to tell if people are losing work because we're not seeing let's audition a human actor versus an AI and it's going to go with the AI. They're just not even putting out the audition, right? So they're just going directly to AI and synthetic voices. So unless there's some kind of disclaimer, which, you know, we don't currently know, you could be listening to a recording that could be a synthesized voice. There's no consumer rights in that aspect for us to know whether what we're listening to is digital or human.
You know, that's a really interesting thing too, is if somebody is purchasing an audiobook.
Absolutely.
Any lover of books is a lover of soul and a lover of performance. And do they have the right? Is that disclosed? Would it say?
I believe it does in the Apple. I believe Apple right now, last that I looked, I haven't looked at it in a while. They had four voices they were using. And I think they were clearly noted that they were synthetic voices. But I don't know that there's any requirement for that to be disclosed when in this. And so that's kind of something that we're hopefully pushing for as well, is some kind of consumer rights so that we know what we're getting. You know, same thing in, you know, you're watching something on Netflix or you're watching something that's been, you know, we see Avatar, we know that it's CGI, we know it's digital, right?
Yeah.
But some of this quality of this can be so good, photorealistic, human realistic, that it sometimes can be very difficult to know if what we're looking at is digital creation or not.
And I think we know, but you hear from a lot of fans of video games that don't realize that a facial scan or somebody that's been scanned into a game isn't the actual person doing the motion capture.
Right.
It might not be the person doing the voices. And, you know, so I don't know that sort of everybody understands that, because when you play a video game, you know, you don't necessarily know what goes into that whole process. So
for sure.
Really new. When did you first notice AI kind of encroaching on the voice acting industry?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, you know, we've seen mocap and PCAP and everything for a while, and some of this digital information that's been happening. I think it first kind of came on everybody's radar when we kind of heard about James Earl Jones earlier last year, and then kind of came out with the Apple audiobooks and came out with some of the 11 Lab stuff. You know, it's something that's been on my radar for a couple of years, but in a very kind of like, oh, it's this interesting technology to see what happens when it hits mainstream. And it happened pretty quickly, for sure.
I mean, in sort of every industry, I feel like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you read that New York Times article about Microsoft Bing? Very interesting article about AI Bing, who, after chatting with it, and the reporter was kind of deep diving and trying to get it to kind of open up about it. It basically said, like, it was coming up with multiple personalities and like this dark side. It wanted to be called Venom.
I did hear about that.
I'm going to share the article for my story because I was so alarmed. I was like,
wow.
Wait, what? Porter basically left like, it was a very scary night. I know AI is not sentient, but I felt like it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is just, this is essentially day one of all this.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we are at day one. We are on, you know, version whatever, you know, I mean, early stages of this for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you know, has it been defined if somebody's voice is considered intellectual property?
That you can't patent it. And I don't believe it's IP. It is in California and New York. There's right of publicity, which says it's part of your identity. So it can kind of somewhat fall under identity theft areas, but it varies by state. And there's like, I think there's 13 states that have kind of strong right of publicity laws in the United States, but not every state has that. And then the question is, does that right of publicity pertain to where the voice actor is or where the work was created? And how do we enforce that? There's no national laws here. You know, we're trying to find some way, hopefully, to get legislation in. We're working with some groups in Spain and Nigeria and Kenya and Colombia to help kind of get some of these other countries involved as well, to help find some regulations and rules in those countries. The EU is currently working on some AI stuff right now, but, you know, it's hard to tell what's going to come out of that.
Interesting. So, Tim, it sounds like this is really a huge project that Nava and you guys and the Vocal Variants group is taking on. How are you guys managing your time around this? You know, it just sounds like a full-time job.
It is a full-time job. It is definitely a full-time job. You know, we have a great board. It was four of us on the main board, and then we have 25 or 26 advisory board members who help with all of this. We, you know, we're a community association. We are made up of voice actors in the community across all spectrums, non-union, union, FICOR, animation, video games, explainer videos, everything that we can get into to try and cover the industry. And, you know, our goal is to hopefully, you know, is to kind of raise the awareness of voice acting within the entertainment industry as a whole, but also within SAG-AFTRA, within the union, to help kind of carve out a more explicit understanding of what voice actors do within the larger entertainment industry, which is very different than on camera. You know, in it's similar, but very, very unique and very different.
Yeah, in so many ways. How we work, how often we work, how we audition.
Yeah.
So Tripod Slang Gear, you just went over the goals, but can you tell us, for what people who join Nava, the benefits that you offer?
Sure. We launched with access to a national healthcare plan for freelance voice actors, which was kind of the big headline that when we launched in November. But we have access to member classes. We have a bunch of partners who are giving discounts for classes and training and education. We have a Pathways Initiative, which is something that I spearhead, which is for somebody getting into the industry, they want to understand what the ramifications of are going union, non-union, FICOR. You can sit down with one of our Pathway members and discuss what that looks like for your career as you progress through the industry. And as we grow, we're going to have more offerings. Well, we have vision and dental healthcare, or dental insurance as well, that you can get through once you're a member of NAVA. And then, you know, like I said, as we grow, we're trying to bring in more partners and provide more benefits for our members, more discounts, working on some gear discounts and other things along those lines.
Nice. And that was started by you and Karen?
Myself and Karen. Yep. Karen Guilfrey. Yep. Karen Guilfrey is our vice president. And we right away brought in a fairly large group of advisors to help us with this. And we launched in November. We've actually been around. We announced it about a year ago in March at VO Atlanta. And now we have been around for just a year.
Amazing.
Since our announcement. And
it's like everywhere all at once. So I wasn't even sure.
Yeah. We ended up at the right place at the right time. And, you know, something that the industry needed in a way that I don't think we even really fully understood what it needed. So,
yeah. And so for you, how are you managing your time then? Have you bitten off more than you could chew?
This is a full-time job. No, and along with my other full-time jobs, you know, I run a studio. I have three studios in LA and, a voice actor. Musician just took over, you know, a year ago, Jay Preston and I took over the voiceover resource guide. So we've been working full time to get the voiceover resource guide launched, relaunched. You know, I'm doing everything I can all at once while I have the energy and the drive to do it. And I have the ability to do it. So we're pushing hard while we can. I have a great, great group of people who are helping us out, helping me out and doing this to making sure that I don't kill myself and don't die in the middle of this process. But, you know, it's something that's important. And we've been able to get traction and find that we're able to make some pretty substantial changes and benefits right away. So we're going to keep pushing hard in that as much as we can. So
amazing. Yeah. So anyone that's interested in signing up, Kayla Pitts has, I pinned her comment with the link.
Kayla. Yep. Kayla is a member. She's a NAVA member right there.
So this org, voice of a resource guy. When I first moved to LA, like 20 years ago.
So
it was like, you got to pick up the Vorg. I'm like, what's the Vorg? Then it moved online. You can still, I don't know if you guys are going to do digital booklets and things.
We did. Yep. We launched last year in June of last year. We brought it back. It went dormant for a couple of years all through COVID. There wasn't any need to print it. And it had changed hands in 2019. Dave and Dave had sold it. They sold the studio, and along with the studio went the Vorg. And the website hadn't been updated in 5-10 years, possibly. So the last 10 months, we've done a completely full revamp of the Vorg. It's at thevorg.net right now is where you can see the new site, and then it will eventually replace the old site on there. We will have a new printed edition coming out in July, which will be New York, Chicago, LA, and regional. So we've gone fully regional. The website's pretty freaking amazing. So it's a international database of coaches and recording studios and demo producers and training and tech. And there's a map, and you can just open up the map and see every single listing in the Vorg that's on a map. And then, you know, you're in Denver somewhere, you need a studio, you can pull up the studio listings in Denver and hopefully find a studio or wherever you happen to be.
That's amazing. So. I mean, even now, you know, I guess I haven't been on the new website, I don't think.
Yeah, we just launched last week.
The Vorg is such a great resource for anybody, you know, old or new to the industry, because you can just, you can search by there. Do you still have the agency listings as well?
Yep, every agency listing is on there. And we've actually even added, we've reached out to all the agencies to ask how they prefer to have submissions received. Uh-huh. So there is a preferred method of contact on the listings.
That's so that great. At
least voice actors, we know, you know, are they accepting submissions? So they prefer, a couple of them only want to receive submissions on Facebook. Some have emails.
Facebook.
So, yeah.
I wasn't judging.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? That's how they only want to be submitted throughout Facebook, which, you know, I guess, when everything's global now, it's very tough to receive, you know, if you're receiving demos in every possible, you know, electronic format, you know, if you can get it all. And I was surprised too.
Also, it's like, I guess it's housed on there and you're not having your inbox flooded with potentially large MP3s.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody go check out Vorg too, because so that's so interesting too. Just moving back to like what you said about that Netflix contract, have we seen that with any other dubbing companies in particular?
Nothing that I know of offhand. That was the one that kind of went out and got everybody's attention very early on. And there are nothing that I know of. There have been some other smaller kind of dubbing things that the contract people have had from that were non-union that had some language in there, but that's the only one that we know of, that I'm aware of currently, that was a union contract that had that language in there.
And maybe it was even just there just in case, who knows if
So this is, you know, part of the technology is that people aren't sure, you know, potentially I might want to, you know, instead of having to come back in for pickups, maybe we can just synthesize their voice and throw in a couple sentences, a couple words if we need to, which on the surface seems like a great idea. Under the surface, when you start looking at what the potential that means, that could grow into, oh, well, we don't need to bring them back in for, we'll just do an entire new scene without them. We don't need to bring them back in for that scene. Oh, we don't need to bring them back in for that whole part of the game. Oh, you know what? We don't need to bring them back in at all because we already have all the data that we need to create a synthesized voice of this person.
And then the question being, how much does the voice actor get compensated for their synthetic voice?
Right.
Is it a full pay?
Which goes back into our licensing concept, right? You know, because there are certain things that we can't do. Something that Karin talks about is, you know, if you wanted to narrate the New York Times cover to cover to coincide with its print release every day, no human can do that. You just can't physically do it. Can't narrate the New York Times cover to cover. But I would license, you could license out your synthetic voice to do that. You get paid a royalty, you get paid residuals, you get paid the usage like you would with a song that goes out that you're a songwriter for, and you get compensated for that. And you also know where it's going to be used. You have, you know, contract in place that it can only be used for this thing. It can't be used anywhere else.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
Is there a danger in voice actors playing around with different websites like 11 Labs or was it OpenAI that you mentioned?
Uberduck.ai and fakeu.ai. You know, there's not, according to those, all of those sites, according to their terms of service, nothing can be used for commercial work. You can't use those and sell those. If I create a voice on 11 Labs, I'm the only one who has access to it. according to the terms of service. Now, it is somewhere up there that it exists, so potentially somebody could access it, but it's not something that anybody else is supposed to have access to or is able to use. So I have multiple voices up on 11 Labs that I use just to mess around with and see, you know, like just for fun to see what we can do with and see how we can mess around with those things. I'm not concerned about it going anywhere outside of 11 Labs.
Yeah.
You know, but sites get hacked, but the things potentially happen. So it's hard to tell, you know, what exactly,
yeah,
what danger you lie in there, you know, so.
It's interesting because Maddie Staniszewski, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, the co-founder of 11 Labs, motherboard, that the company sees a future in which AI companies and voice actors partner together. And, you know, I think someone else had spoken up that the way that their quote was worded made it feel like they were completely disconnected from voice actors. But it sounds like you're more open to the idea of licensing, like, as you said, musicians might receive royalties on a score.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can take a hard line stance and say that no AI should ever be used in anything anywhere ever. And we have nothing, unfortunately, nothing we can do about it. Currently we can't stop somebody from using our voice somewhere if they have access to our data set. So can we work with these places and ensure that our voice is used in a place that can supplement us, but not replace us. And, otherwise I've been a musician for a long time, and I watched the industry get decimated with Napster, with all of this let's push back against the technology. And unfortunately, the technology won. Like Napster idea, streaming MP3s, Spotify, that has taken away from musicians, right? They don't make their money off of streaming services. That's where a lot of the stuff is consumed. And we're just concerned that we're not going to be a part of this conversation. We want to be a part of this conversation because it will happen with us, with or without us, unfortunately.
Yeah. Hindsight is 50-50, but what do you think we musicians could have done differently to prevent what happened with streaming?
Well, I mean, you had the record industries basically saying that nobody's going to really want to listen to something on streaming, that the quality's not going to be good. Nobody's going to actually, because the quality's not going to be good enough, people aren't going to want to consume it that way. And took a very hard line stance and said, Rick, we're not going to support this. We're not going to authorize the use, and sued everybody, went after the consumers who were using it and tried to make an example of the consumers. And now you had now had an adversarial position between the consumers and the creators, essentially. And the creators lost out in a lot of that sense. And I don't, you know, we are the creators of these things, and we need to be a part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. That's where I keep pushing. So
now, obviously, AI voices is a very important aspect in way in which the industry is shifting. Are there other key issues for voice actors that you see on the table?
That's a good question. I think, I think one of the, probably something that's been happening for 20 years is this degradation of union work and this move to a lot of non-union work that doesn't necessarily pay less. It just has less protections, less assurances of being, of being paid, less assurances of residuals of any of these contracts. Anybody who's worked in a non-union contract could have given up their voice over the last however many years and not even know it. And that, kind of generally erodes the rates that happen in the industry. And that's something that's been happening prior to, prior to AI, but it's been happening for 20 years with, the rise of online casting sites, the kind of, and this move to the ability to hire, to find non-union voice actors that are talented, that arguably being union or non-union is not an indicator of talent. So
is that something that NAVA is also taking on, or is that something that you feel, is there any way to shape issues that might resolve from that?
Potentially, I think just getting SAG-AFTRA to be aware of what the voiceover industry, how the voiceover industry works and operates is going to affect that. There is a voiceover department in SAG-AFTRA now, which is only a few years old. Up until a few years ago, there wasn't a department that actually explicitly handled voiceover work within the union. And now there are employees who handle just voiceover. And it's taken 20 years for that to happen, right?
Is it my, maybe obviously my perspective is going to be blurred, but it seems like voiceover is such a huge part of SAG-AFTRA. Are we not? Is it some of the TV contracts are so huge that they are outweighing the income of voice actors, or?
That's a really good question. We don't have the numbers on how many voice actors are actually in the union, but the union's only 160 or 170,000 people in the union. Half of those members are in Los Angeles. And so I guarantee you there are not 80,000 voice actors in Los Angeles. So,
like 20 of us.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly. We did just put out, actually, on the NAVA website, there's the state of voiceover, which we just put out a couple of days ago, which has a lot of information about, you know, about this. I think 60% of full-time voice actors are non-union in the country. But, I think that the general, unions in general, I think there's been a pushback against unions for decades, right? And we're starting to see a rise in support of the unions in a way we haven't seen in a long, long time. And that's going to come along with a rise in possibly, more voiceover work returning into the union fold, which, is about healthcare and pension and health and safety and security and ensuring you get paid. Rates in the union are not necessarily higher than non-union, and then sometimes they're considerably lower than non-union, depending on what contract you're working under. But, there is, in this case, if you find a contract from 10 years ago that is a union contract and has AI synthetic voices in there, the union can go after it for you. In the non-union world, we can't. So,
interesting. I will share beta VO to my stories and on Twitter, because
And there's actually, just to because a tripod slime gear posted up something there. We are, at least in the last, since COVID, the voiceover industry is a global industry. It is a, we're working with speaking with the Voice Actors League of Kenya and a group in Nigeria. A lot of voice acting to find authentic stories are going to the authentic storytellers. And so if you're in Argentina, you're in Colombia, you're in Spain, you're in Nigeria, Kenya, if you can find access, you have access to these auditions, these jobs that are taking place all around the world. So I think, it's not limited the way that it used to be. And voice actors, producers, creators are more open to working with voice actors all over the world as opposed to just in a single place. LA is still very heavily dominated animation. If you want to work in animation, it still takes place in Los Angeles, still takes place in person for a lot of that stuff, but not only the way it used to.
And that's another big shift in the industry.
Absolutely.
The globalization of voiceover, both for better and for worse, comes down to perspective. But are we also seeing a lot bigger numbers of voice actors compared to 20 years ago?
Compared to 20 years ago, for sure. I think we are kind of in a second cycle of, every 8 or 9 years, this new cycle of voice actors comes in. It's a big influx of new voice actors. It takes about 4 years for it to kind of thin out and people who weren't making a living disappear. And then as the kind of crop, kind of rises up and becomes full-time voice actors. I started in 96 in Seattle. I came to LA in 2002, was doing voiceover the whole time, but I came down and primarily did music. And then I didn't go full-time into voiceover until 2016. And that whole group of us that kind of started in 2014, 2015, 2016, we cycled through. And now, 8-9 years later, there's this new cycle of people coming in who came in through the pandemic, who have been working solid, hard for a couple and a half, 2.5 years. And now those who were successful are staying, and those who had a hard time are starting to kind of thin out and people are starting to leave. And we'll have a couple of years of kind of recalibration. And then I think it'll kick back in again in a few years. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is, right?
Yeah.
It is a real privilege to be able to make a living as a voice actor, but that comes with its own challenges as well. We talk a lot about, on my podcast anyways, great fun stories of the industry, but sometimes the day-to-day grind can be challenging, I think, emotionally more than anything.
Yeah. And it is a day-to-day grind. I mean, that's, one of the things that people eventually learn is, how much work it takes. You're starting out, it's going to be 200 or 300 auditions before you book a job. And even once you're, you know, once you're booking, you're still doing a ton of auditions to every book.
And that's, you know, the thing that's very different from on camera.
Absolutely.
There's only so many people they can see and take submissions from on camera, self-tape being a little different. But that voice actors, we might do 30, 40, you know, auditions a week. It really depends on how many agents you have and stuff.
I want to start
going to some of the questions that are popping in because this kind of cycles into Jay Currently's question about whether stepping into voice acting is costly.
That's an interesting question. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. And it depends on, you know, on what you want to invest, what you're able to invest, and what you're willing to invest. But it doesn't have to be. There is, in anything that you move into, there's going to be an investment. If you want to be a musician, you have to buy an instrument. If you want to be a voice actor, you need some basic gear to get started, but you don't need to invest a huge amount of money. There is training, you have to get educated, you have to take classes, you have to eventually, you know, produce a demo at some point to get the work, but it doesn't have to be prohibitively expensive.
And a lot of that comes down to managing your money as you would a business. And that's not always something that us artists are taught, knowing whether you're going to get a good return on investment from this workshop or this class by growing as an artist, or whether you're going to get a better investment by working with X producer or, you know, Y producer who's $600 more.
Right.
So a lot of it I found is trial and error and asking your community, and sometimes just giving it a shot and seeing.
Yeah.
But it can be very expensive. If you talk,
it can be very expensive.
You don't need, you know, these are $2,000 microphones. This is my full-time job I've been doing for 20 years. So you don't need that to get started. Right.
No, you don't. You know, I mean, the most important thing is the space you're in, really. If you're talking about getting started, if you have a good space, you can do a lot in a good space. But I think one thing to think about as well is that more and more voice acting is about voice business than it is about the voice acting. And it's the business of voiceover primarily takes up most of the time. The business of voiceover is where most of us spend our time, I think, you know.
And, you know, it's so interesting, too, because this is another topic that I feel something that has changed is this social media and the impact that has on our career. We used to send postcards in the mail to remind casting directors what we're working on. And now I haven't sent anything in the mail in so long. And last time I tried to address this, we're like, we're not working from the studios anymore. Yeah. I don't know if that will change.
Yeah.
Maybe now a handwritten card is like kitschy and like.
Right.
But,
exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen people get jobs from TikTok, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
A lot.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. So that's a pretty different change. Do you have any advice for people who voice actors in terms of social media presence or?
Yeah, you know, I think it's all part of the marketing that we do as voice actors. And you know, these pay-to-play sites, the online casting sites, are as much marketing platform as they are casting sites. And the more presence you have in any of these places, the people know what you do and they know what you specialize in. It's, you know, it's even, you know, to the point now of like, you know, oh, I don't do everything as a voice actor, but this is what I do. I specialize in promo and political and animation and anime. That's you know, kind of my area of expertise. So I can do everything, but that's not where I really excel, you know,
It's similar. I don't do political, but the promo and anime and animation is funny because it's like those two things do not seem to go together. A lot of people that are amazing actors but just don't have a certain gravitas to their voice may potentially have a great promo read, and there's more openings for different types of sounds.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. We're similar. Kayla Pitts has a great question, which is, would Nava consider compiling a list of orgs or companies that voice actors could feel confident working with to embrace the technology and potentially create their own AI voice?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, that's something, you know, it's I'm always hesitant to have any kind of like accreditation or, you know, approval without us having actually worked with a lot of these companies to know for sure. But that definitely, you know, there are potentially some companies that are reaching out to us and talking to us. And absolutely, I mean, you know, something wrong with us having an available list of people that we've dealt with and talked with. We currently don't have that, but that definitely is something that we could do. And Kayla, I know we have to talk. We're scheduled to talk anyway at some point. So about some other things as well. So about this technology. So that's something that we could, yeah, there's lots of, we're talking to everybody about these things, you know. So I mean, Kayla and I had a great conversation about the same topic at a conference in February. So, you know, there's lots of people like Kayla who are out there who are voice actors who understand this technology as well. And that's the best thing we need are people who are all the voice actors out there who are working in these areas, paying attention and knowing what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tim, I did want to take you back and hear from you a little bit about the services that you also offer at your studios. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We have three studios in Los Angeles. It's a Soundbox group. So we got Soundbox LA, Soundbox Westside, Soundbox Woodland Hills now. We are talent-owned and operated voiceover studios that I started. I had, you know, this goes back to the beginning of my voiceover career that when, you know, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know what classes to take. I didn't know, you pick up a Vorg and everybody in the Vorg looks the same. So I didn't know where to invest my money. And I had a studio. I started inviting people over to the studio. I'm like, hey, let's figure this out ourselves. And the studios grew out of my workout groups, out of the classes that I was trying to put together. And that's where I got access to, you know, to learning about this industry was through other voice actors and all of us kind of growing together. So I, you know, anybody who's got a community in your area, put together a workout group, you know, we're global now. You put together a Zoom class and get something together, meet with people, you know, and put together, you can get a Zoom group with people who are, you know, who can't leave there. There's nowhere to go in their place either. You know, you can find a way to get together with other people who are doing the same thing that you're doing. And you can make that yourself. Make your own community.
And I think that community is so important for many ways. I mean, sharing resources and information. Lauren Klang many years ago started the Voiceover Business Group, I think. Voiceover Business Group. And we would meet in person, a bunch of voice actors. And Rachel Fulcinetti, the CJ.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who was in that original group. A handful of people, some of whom, you know, have since parted ways with voice acting, and many of whom are still in the industry. And it was a great way to also have accountability. And I think it's easy to put things like on your goal sheet and be like, I need to compile, like for me right now, I'm like tweaking my final video game reel of putting stuff on there. But I'm like, kind of want like a new motion graphic intro. So I'm like, do I wait for that or do I just proceed forward? Yeah. Right. Well, who is your accountability partner? You know, for me, this is like a planner that I use. I've been using this planner for like 8 years, but it has you write out your dreams for the year in a bunch of different areas. But then you have to check in with yourself quarterly.
Interesting.
And so every quarter, it's like there's a brand new set of goals and then it's chucking away at that, you know. So even if you can be accountable with yourself, I think human nature is that we always think we can do so much more than we can. And I always underestimate how long auditions are going to take me because they are time consuming. I mean, even if it's just a couple lines, it might take, you know, you gotta break down the copy and, you know, so I think that the accountability of working with an accountability buddy or working with a group, creating your own group, it just gives you structure. You're always needing a structure because this job has so little structure in it. And that can be very hard. There's no next step. There's no checking in with your bosses to say, like, how's my performance? We're self-employed, and that can be challenging. I think a big part of the job, which also leads back to managing your business, is creating those structures for yourself. Somebody asks, why do you think Hollywood actors are getting cast in video games instead of voice actors? Well, that's an interesting question because plenty of voice actors do video games, but with feature films and animation, we know that a star has marketing potential. So they're able to help promote the movie and promote the game, and that is beneficial to the game company. But, you know, Tim, you were just recently in God of War Ragnarok and...
Close. Record of Ragnarok on Netflix.
Or Record of Ragnarok.
Record of Ragnarok. Yeah.
So many
different. So many Ragnaroks. But yeah, there's an interesting article today in The Guardian specifically about Chris Pratt voicing Mario and how, you know, this is a sign that we need more like actual voice actors in these games, in these shows. But yeah, it's in The Guardian today. It's actually a really good article, you know, a really interesting article about how, you know, just because somebody is a good on-screen actor doesn't mean that they can be a voice actor and that we should be hiring. And the difference between someone like Jack Black, they specifically talk about Jack Black, who is well known not only as an actor, but as a voice actor, uh-huh. right? His, you know, he is a phenomenal voice actor. And how his performance is so much different.
His performance? I haven't seen him.
They were saying, they were just talking about how much better his performance is than Chris Pratt, because he does have an experience as being a voice actor.
Oh, yes. And they did not like Chris Pratt's.
Right. Yep.
Guitar. So you're a guitar player as well. Where we can hear your music?
I play the band called the Urban Renewal Project. That's all urpmusic.com. And that's where all that stuff is. I put out a solo album about 10 years ago, but I don't know where that is anymore. Somewhere. So
does your band play live shows?
We haven't in a long time. It's a 14-piece band, so it's hard for us to find venues to play. It's a full hip hop orchestra.
Guitar merchant in Woodland Hills.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, they did a big stage out there. Yeah, I haven't been there in a while. I played there like 15 years ago. I've been there in a long time.
I used to. I used to play there.
It's awesome.
You could get a glass of wine. But.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
John Rahani has a question. Are there types of VO work that you think can be won back by the union given recent support and others that you think have gone too far?
Potentially. I mean, I think all of it can be potentially won back at some point if people are willing to sit down and talk. The problem is that the union does have a bad reputation amongst producers and creators and people who have worked with them over the years, because they are admittedly very hard to work with. Mm-hmm. And there's been the new group that we have of people who are in the union now trying to make the union an easier place to work with are succeeding in trying to make the union more flexible and quicker. You know, it's a massive corporation. It's a massive industry that can't move as quickly as voiceover moves. We all know voiceover moves quickly, right? You know, we'll audition, you know, we'll get an audition Sunday night, submit it before Monday morning, get cast at noon, recorded at 2:00, it goes to air at 5:00, right?
Yeah.
Potentially work that quickly. You know, union can't work that quickly. Just cannot work that fast.
Well, that's why the rise of NAVA and other organizations that are more catered to voice actors could be beneficial in being that conduit.
Exactly. We're hoping to be that conduit. We're hoping to be that bridge between, you know, all of the voiceover industry, including non-union and FICOR, and bridge that gap between
all major market.
Regional, everybody, and try and, you know, we support, you know, we support everybody who works in the business of voiceover. And that's who we want to support. So,
well, on that note, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. If anyone's interested in getting some more information or signing the AI?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's an open letter that we have on there that Vocal Variants put together. And then the synthetic AI contract addendum is on there as well. It's open. Anybody's welcome to download that and use that in their contracts.
Amazing. Thing. And we can find Tim is at The Big Vox, VOX.
Yeah.
We are on Instagram at Tim Freelander on Twitter, Nava Voices.
Yep. Nava Voices is Nava Voices everywhere on every platform. So you can made that one easy.
So. Well, thank you so much for your time, Tim. We appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you guys soon, okay? Bye. Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.